I'm Alan Smale, and I write alternate history, historical fantasy, and hard science fiction. Most recently, and very exciting for me personally, I have Hot Moon, which is my alternate Apollo techno thriller with heart, and that's set entirely on and around the moon.
This is a continuing episode of a series with Alan Smale. The series started at episode 319. Go to the show archive to catch up. So Vivian plays a key role in both books. So if I was in a coffee shop near one of the places, let's see, she would be on the moon most of the time. What would she be like if I met her, is where I'm going with this. I was trying to set it on Earth. I realized you just kind of said that it's not set on Earth. So I'm skipping that part.
Well, if you met her on Earth in between missions, she'd probably be a little bit fed up because she doesn't really want to be there. She's a very smart person. She's a very engaging person. She's better with people than she thinks she is. She's been in the military, and she was a military brat growing up. So she's actually very used to being around male company, which helps her when she's an astronaut, because there are women astronauts, but the majority of the astronauts are still male. Some of the cosmonauts are female as well, and we do meet some female cosmonauts along the way, and Vivian has interactions with those as well. I would say that you would get the impression that Vivian is a very smart person. She's very talkative. She is good with people. She's probably on the small side, like physical stature. She's on the small side. Her physical size actually comes into play in the books, so that's why I particularly mentioned that. So sometimes if she's in a guy's spacesuit, it's going to be big on her. For example, her hair is pretty short. That's for practical reasons. Not super short, but short-ish for practical reasons in space. And yeah, you'd get the impression that she's very bright. You'd probably guess that she was in the military from the way she speaks, from the kind of clipped way that she speaks. And that's very similar to the way a lot of the other astronauts spoke at the time. I spent a lot of time getting the astronaut dialect right. So it probably wouldn't surprise you to learn that she's kind of a technical person and in a technical industry.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking at the covers now. I'm looking at Hot Moon and Radiant Sky. And I can see that she's featured. That must be, I'm assuming that's her then on the front cover. And she's like, so on Hot Moon, she's climbing into an Apollo ice. I'm not sure what this device is called. It's a lander, I suppose.
Yes. On the front cover, Vivian is climbing into her lunar module up the steps of the Apollo 32 lunar module. And you can see the base around her. In the background, there are two tall things, which are the habitats that the NASA astronauts are living in. And the cover also shows what is obviously some Soviet people who are after Vivian. And there's a lunar cod vehicle on the right hand side of the cover, which is the Soviet equivalent of a lunar rover. So that's a four or six wheeled vehicle. And there are also some Soviet lunar dirt bikes there. Yeah. So
cool.
That's kind of fun. Just imagine a motorbike on the moon.
Yeah, that's a good action shot you have here on the cover. That's pretty nice. It tells like it's going to be a thrilling type of read. And then the other one is also has Vivian and something crashed into the moon.
Yes, the second cover is another action sequence. It's set on the lunar surface. It's set on what's the edge of obviously a very big drop off. We're actually on the crater rim. And something is exploding in front of Vivian. Vivian is riding on this one. It's Vivian who is riding a lunar dirt bike. It's a NASA dirt bike this time. So she's riding across the lunar surface. And in front of her, something rather terrible has happened to the lunar rover, which is on the lunar geological survey that she is engaged in at the time. Something has just exploded in or near that lunar rover, and it's actually been flung off the lunar surface by the explosion.
Nice.
Blown into the air. Not the air, but blown into the vacuum upwards off the surface by evildoers.
Yeah, no, those are very catching covers. I think that really grabs the interest. I mean, especially I like on Hot Moon, I want to appreciate that you have, I think you said it's about 1, 2, 3, 4, might be an 8-wheel. I don't know how many wheeled that rover is. It has CCCP written across it. So it's very like, oh, wow. Right away, you're thinking like, okay, there's a lander with an American flag and a CCP kind of attack machine coming in. So that really sets up what you're doing with that story.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time on the cover, and one thing I was very happy about is how much input I had on the cover. It was obviously Kasich and the artist who came up with the concept, but you'll often find that authors are not very happy with the covers that they get from their publishers. I am actually a very happy author because Kasich involved me in this process all the way, and I had a back and forth. I was talking directly to the artist who did this work, and it was a great collaboration, and we came up with a very nice cover as a result. And the cover art was done by Christina Mervold.
Cool. So it sounds like Vivian loves her job, likes to be in space, would be frustrated when she isn't. Are there any like strong secondary characters that she's going to work with in Radiant Sky?
In the first book, you can tell that she's very close to her crew. Crews tend to train together for a long time. So she's very close to Ellis Meyer, who is her lunar module pilot, and to Dave Horn, who is the command module pilot. And people who remember the Apollo era will remember that the command module actually stays in orbit around the moon while the lunar module goes down to the surface. So Vivian and Ellis will come down to the lunar surface and Dave will stay in orbit. There are other characters. There are other, like, you'll get to meet Terry Brock, who's the first woman on the moon and who is a lunar module pilot who is now working at the Hadley base. The commander of Hadley is a guy called Rick Norton, and he and Vivian actually butt heads a little bit to begin with. I mean, she's kind of mad and frustrated at not being where she wants to be and at losing her mission. She's very disappointed that she's not at the Marius Hills exploring like she's supposed to be and is instead sucked into this lunar conflict situation. So to start with, she butts heads a bit with him, but they end up working together pretty well. And there's an older astronaut called Casey Buchanan who plays quite a strong part in the... He was one of the people who originally set up Hadley Base, and so he plays quite a big role in it later on. And there are the cosmonauts, of course. On the other side, we have Nikolai Makarov and Svetlana Belyakova. They were the crew of the second lunar mission. The first mission, the first landing on the moon, was actually by Alexei Leonov for the Soviets, and the second was also on the Soviet side. And so Svetlana Belyakova was the first woman on the moon on that mission as the flight engineer for Nikolai Makarov. And we'll get to meet all of those characters. We get to meet the characters on board Columbia Station, which is a 6-person crew in the Skylab that's orbiting the moon. And they're very much involved in the initial conflict in the book. It takes place in free fall around in lunar orbit. And so we get to meet all of those guys. There are 6 people in orbit there. They're all guys. And they continue to feature in the book as the book continues, because there's a lot going on in space as well as on the moon. So we do have several points of view during the book. It's not just Vivian's point of view. We get the point of view of the people who are up there in the Skylab, and also some chapters from the Soviet point of view. And so a lot of this interleaves as we go through the book. We see a lot of people have very different motivations for being up there. And of course, everybody believes that they're doing the right thing because nobody believes they're the villain in any particular case. So I've tried to be as sympathetic with the Russian characters, with the Soviet characters, as I have been with the US characters.
If you enjoy listening to Sci-Fi Thoughts, but find it difficult to remember to check the website for new shows, get this technology from the future. Install into your phone a podcast player. Using this, you can subscribe to our podcast feed. And next thing you know, You'll be cruising around in your car with your phone plugged in, playing Sci-Fi Thoughts, or you'll be out there jogging, or you'll be doing whatever you want to do.
This is the Police. Put the podcast player down.
And have your ears plugged into some cool science fiction programming. You can find instructions on LancerKind.com. If you're listening to this show in a podcast player, you will find show notes that zip right into your device. If you don't have a podcast player and you want to see the show notes, go back to where you downloaded the MP3. This is a continuing episode. The series started at episode 319. So if you want to catch up on some episodes you missed, go to the scifithoughts.space and you will find a search box and you can type in whatever episode number you wish and it will find it for you. Next episode, more Alan Smail. I believe you are planning to do a reading today.
I certainly could do a reading, and we've just described the cover of Radiant Sky. What I was thinking of reading was actually some of the events that take place around about that time. From Chapter 2, and we're at the Lunar South Pole with Vivian Carter. It is January the 22nd, 1983, and Vivian is taking part in, she's actually leading the Lunar Geological Survey, which is a team of six people who are traveling around the moon from pole to pole, and they're three quarters of the way around the moon. They're going to be rounding the South Pole and heading up the near side of the moon back to the Zvezda Copernicus base. The assault came just a few hours after LGS-1 turned the corner. They had crawled around the South Pole now, the difficult light angle and the poorly mapped terrain combining against them. They'd approached it as close as possible, following the rim of Shackleton Crater to the 30 degrees west line. At that point, they were within a mile of the geographic pole, so to the resolution of the maps they had, LGS-1 was at that moment basically there, with the absolutely true pole just over the crater rim in permanent shadow. "Farthest south," Vivian said. 90 degrees within a sneeze. "We did it. Both poles in the bag. Done and done." "Congratulations, Commander," said Kizemba. "Me? Nope. It was all of us." "Go team." "Go team," Lekontsev agreed wholeheartedly. And that was that, and they kept moving along. They had many more miles to cover that day. From Shackleton, they headed north, but wasn't every direction north now? Passing the much larger Shoemaker crater to their right, and approaching the craggy, rugged, irregular, and equally broad Howarth crater on their left. The lighting was terrible. They tried to keep the MoLab, the mobile laboratory, the rover, and the bike in the oblique sunlight as far as possible, but still had to navigate precariously through pools of deep darkness, following the path they'd laid out months before, using several painstaking physical models of the land. Landscape. And of course, the modeled terrain wasn't exactly true to reality, but the poles were hard, and everybody knew they would be.